In 2023, extreme heat waves rolled across Earth's surface so fast, and there were so many, who can remember them all? In some places, heat was up to 9 degrees C or 16 Fahrenheit hotter than normal. Summer-level heat waves struck in winter and again in spring, followed by simply astounding heat on every continent but Australia. 2023 wasn't just the hottest year ever recorded. It was a year when forests burned, cities cooked, and crops died. It was very uncomfortable. So let us patch together the heat headlines, including many you did not see. Our guest is Sarah Perkins Kirkpatrick, and she led an international team of scientists publishing their global overview paper titled Extreme Terrestrial Heat in 2023. Dr. Perkins Kirkpatrick is with the Fenner School of Environment and Society at Australian National University in Canberra, and also the ARC Centre of Excellence for 21st Century Weather, also at ANU. So from Canberra, Australia, Sarah Perkins Kirkpatrick, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Hello.
Okay, so heat records tend to be splattered all over the place in local and national records. Was it difficult to find the portrait of 2023 of heat around the world?
Pretty phenomenal year. Pretty much every continent had these record-breaking or near-record-breaking heat waves. As you said in your introduction, basically the only place that didn't have continuous or really intense heat waves was Australia, where I'm from. That's not to say we didn't have a hot year here. It was reasonably hot. It was just hotter overall. We didn't have those record-breaking extremes. But basically everywhere else in the world had multiple relentless heat waves almost throughout the year, and we simply couldn't cover them all. We had so many that we could choose from, and it was a matter of just choosing the ones that either we had the most data on or had the worst impacts or were just the worst overall.
And your report highlights extreme heat in 4 continental areas. Let us start with South America, which I think is so badly neglected in the Northern Hemisphere mass media. We might expect 10 or 20 days of unheard-of oppressive heat, but tell us what people in parts of South America experienced in the 2023 time.
Absolutely. I would even add to that I was even shocked to see what happened in South America, and it didn't even receive much attention in other parts of the Southern Hemisphere either. But basically what happened there is that they had heat waves occur in their normally colder parts of the year. So think coming into spring or even at the end of winter, they had some record-breaking events. And during those times of the year, temperatures were what you would expect to see in high summer. They were record-breaking even for a summer heat wave. And they were just so severe, they covered large parts of both the southeast of South America and even central South America as well. South America has an interesting climate. Parts of Bolivia, for example, can get quite hot towards the end of the calendar winter. But even then, what was seen there was quite exceptional. And it just didn't stop. It started around August, which is the winter in the Southern Hemisphere, and just kept on going for the rest of the year. And then we had, during summer in South America, we had heat coupled with high humidity, which resulted in some deaths as well.
Is it South America that experienced at least 130 days of basically a heat wave? Almost a third of a year was just one big heat wave?
So, yes, it was northern South America. So when we're looking, my geography of where countries lie in South America isn't ideal, but certainly in the central to northern parts of South America, around somewhere in the Amazon basin, they had a lot of heat wave days. So we're looking at something between maybe 110 to 150 heatwave days, depending on where you are in that part of the world. So that just basically means, it's heading towards half the year being considered part of a heatwave. Now, what is causing that? That's the million-dollar question. Obviously, 2023 was our hottest year on record. There's a lot of influence from global warming. But in that part of the world, there's also lots of changes with land cover change, with what's happening with the Amazon basin, and being so close to the equator as well. The measurements can come up quite differently there. But certainly, I wouldn't have wanted to be in that part of the world last year. It was just absolutely relentless.
Were you able to tease out what comes from El Nino and the ocean heating versus what is just human caused?
We didn't. So that wasn't the purpose of this study. This study was just to simply report, basically how bad last year was in terms of terrestrial heat waves. But certainly there are components from all of those three. But based on my previous research, anthropogenic climate change or human-induced climate change is by far the biggest driver of heat waves globally. We do tend to see a bit of a boost from El Niño, but funnily enough, that usually happens the year after El Niño happens. So we should, technically speaking, see, you know, more heat this year just because El Niño has already happened. Whether or not that happens this year remains to be seen. But it was a little bit of a surprise just how hot last year was. And on top of that, as you mentioned, our oceans were incredibly warm. This paper didn't even touch on marine heat waves, but they were in a lot of places all over the world. And that would have certainly contributed to the heat waves that we saw on land too. But we haven't yet been able to disentangle the responsibilities of each of those mechanisms.
And what about North America, where many of our listeners are? It seemed like there was unusual heat spreading all the way from Mexico to Alaska in 2023.
Look, it was certainly in your high summer, or actually in your July, basically for the whole month. Parts of the southern contiguous United States and also up in the northeast around northern Canada and Alaska were quite hot for, you know, a prolonged period. But the heat waves, it was almost like a flickering effect over Northern America. Heat waves were just going on and off all the time. And that was basically from your late spring, well into your fall as well. It was constant. And interestingly, these heat waves were also occurring at exactly the same time as we're having really bad heat waves over Europe. That often doesn't happen. Sometimes it's a bit of we see a push and pull where one continent might be hard hit and the other one less so. But last year, it was literally everywhere all the time, which was, you know, from my perspective, was spectacular, but also extremely concerning.
So I guess it's asking too much when you're doing a large-scale global study to include things like urban heat islands and what actually happened in record places of the city. I mean, like Phoenix, they hit often 48 degrees C. That's 118 degrees Fahrenheit in the shade, but that's measured at the airport. It must have been even hotter downtown. Do you foresee a big study like yours being able to take all of that into account as well?
It's the next frontier, because we know generally that heat waves are changing. They're obviously increasing. Whether we see that in the climate data or our own anecdotal experience, it's happening. The next frontier is understanding what happens at those local changes. How does that urban heat island or changes in land use affect how heat waves manifest? Getting that better precision, particularly over scales at which people live and work, is so incredibly important that we've barely begun to scratch the surface there. So I certainly see that as a very important development. It's not necessarily something we could have done really until now, just based on our background knowledge and even the resources we have at hand, but it's certainly something we need to focus more on. I talked previously about what was happening in the Amazon basin and the land surface change with deforestation. That's huge for heat waves, and we can see it in the imprint there. So we certainly need to do more research as to what's happening over those scales and how that affects, you know, heat waves at those scales and also more broadly.
So in 2023, as you and your team report, around the Mediterranean, summer heat came in April. What did you find for that April in Europe?
Yeah, so over Europe and also Northern Africa at the beginning of, halfway throughout spring, they had a pretty terrible heat wave. Much of the region was affected with temperatures that were roughly between 3 to 9 degrees Celsius above normal. But some parts of Europe, particularly Portugal, the temperatures were 20 degrees higher than normal. So that's really very, very hot and reminiscent of what you would expect in summer, certainly not in the middle of spring.
And then it got even worse in Europe. Your team says July was the hottest month ever recorded in southern Europe, and that needs about 3 exclamation marks, I think. And I wonder if people even remember, because there's so much coming at us. There's wars, there's AI, there's all these other issues. Once the heat wave's over, we want to forget it, but we really shouldn't. So with repeated heat waves lasting what seems like forever, among the thousands of records set in one year, how did your group decide what to include?
Oh, gosh, that was a hard thing to decide. So, yeah, you're right. Like, Europe in summer, especially in July, was record-breaking heat. They even named a heat wave Cerebrus at that time, and it resulted in massive wildfires in Greece. All the footage of people being evacuated was pretty sobering. So when we came to decide on what heat waves that we'd focus on, we did look at things like, well, what were the impacts? How record-breaking was it? So, you know, going back to the Europe example, it was a record-breaking month, and we had all these people displaced because of the wildfires that these heat waves helped induce. You know, if you think about the South America case, well, they had many heat waves throughout the entire year. And on top of that, they were occurring in winter, which is just, I still can't get over how phenomenal that is. Similarly, as I mentioned, for North America, we did focus on a couple of heat waves more intently, but there was many that flickered on and off throughout the year, so they got a mention too. Not all heat waves could get a mention, but it was basically those patterns and those impacts that really stood out to us. And that's really why Australia didn't get mentioned, because there was nothing that really stood out, despite it being just an overall warmer year than average.
Well, could you tell us about Asia? Because that's where the majority of the people live, in India and in China and Indochina. What happened there?
Yeah, that's a really good point. And Asia was yet another one that, you know, I wouldn't say it took us by surprise, but it was phenomenal and record-breaking in its own right. So around about this time of year is actually when parts of Asia, or most of Asia, are more prone to not just heat but humidity just before the monsoon sets in. And last year they had some not only record-breaking heat but record-breaking hot and humid conditions, which is incredibly deadly because your body just simply can't sweat enough to cool down. So they had record-breaking incidences of the heat index, which incorporates those two variables. And so, you know, basically in April, especially for a week in the middle of April, much of Asia, so we're talking from Vietnam, Thailand, all the way up to eastern and even northern China, you know, record that record-breaking heat and in some places the humidity as well. India was also heavily hit. They do tend to see more of these conditions more often at this time of year, but it was certainly impactful there as well.
Well, I don't want to nitpick, but I noticed in the report that you said that we had warmed since pre-industrial times by 1.45 degrees. And then, of course, Copernicus came out and said it was over 1.5 from pre-industrial already, for at least for the last 12 months. But then I realized, well, maybe the Copernicus report came out after you'd already done all your research. But what do you think about this 1.5? Have we crossed this danger boundary? Does it matter that much?
It matters politically, I think, and if we haven't crossed it, we're incredibly close to it. So that 1.5 degree threshold that you mentioned is just for that 12-month or the last 12-month window. So Copernicus are correct in that statement, but that's just for, you know, 12 months average together relative to pre-industrial conditions. There can very well be, and there will be variability around that potentially in the coming years. And actually Copernicus came out first by saying we had warmed by 1.48 degrees Celsius, but some other agencies said, well, it's probably a little bit less than that. So, you know, we're right on that precipice of that potentially, or, you know, how it's been framed, is safe level of climate change. Now, I don't believe in safe climate change. It's all pretty bad news. But the fact that that's already starting to happen and that will likely constantly exceed that threshold in the next decade, two decades tops, is really frightening, because it symbolises so much. It symbolises that we've failed, at least in part, the Paris Agreement from 9 or 10 years ago. It's pretty sobering, and it just highlights, you know, I guess what we haven't done in that decade, and how much more work we have to do in the next coming decades.
Many Americans are worried about immigration from Latin America, and I look at your report, and it was sizzling in Central America during the period of 2023. And again, when I look at the African heat maps during that period, it just makes me cringe. It was so hot. We have to think eventually that another area of study would carry on from your report to look at, is the migration starting to be driven more by climate change now with these conditions?
Absolutely. Australia, we get a lot of our immigration from Asia, in Southeast Asia. So it's happening everywhere. These sort of countries that have climates that are already very hot and are very humid, and these places are, you know, only going to see more of these record-breaking events more often. It really is quite worrying that, you know, that there could very well be mass migration, and, you know, not too far away as well. It's not my area of expertise to understand how this does affect mass migration, only that I'm certain that it will. But I dare say studies are picking up in this area. And I think because it's just all happening a bit sooner than anyone thought possible, to be honest.
Yes, it is. So what are you working on these days?
I've got a few projects, but my two most central ones, both focusing on heat waves. But the first is focusing on humid heat waves and how they look like in the future. So as I've already discussed, heat and humidity is really important for human health. But it's really not until now that we've been able to understand how those variables combine and what they might look like in the future. And the next study is looking at how heat waves will change once we've reached a net zero carbon emissions, because there seems to be this sort of kind of feeling that once we reach net zero, everything will be better. Things will start to, or if they're not already better, they will improve rapidly. But what most people tend to forget is there's already so much carbon dioxide in the atmosphere that's going to hang around for hundreds of years, and our climate needs to adjust to that. So I think it's really important to understand how climate extremes, just like heat waves, will change for better or for worse once we have reached those net zero emissions globally.
Dr. Perkins Kirkpatrick is with the Fenner School of Environment and Society, Australia National University, and the ARC Centre of Excellence for 21st Century Weather at ANU. Find links to Sarah, this paper, and our conversation in my weekly show blog published Wednesdays at ecoshock.org. By the way, our local electric grid was down the day of this interview. Landline phones keep working during blackouts, and I used a mixer and other peripherals to record to a handheld recorder, all powered by the 2-hour battery backup funded by Radio EcoShock listeners. Thus, even the powerless continue to speak. Thank you for listening.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.